Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And he messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what happened is, When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way. Your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a chap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Okay, time for the holiday schedule of, for those of you who don't know, I'll make the announcement now. We announced it yesterday. We started off, it'll be 10 years exactly on December the 24th, 10 years. And we started off with as It's My House. And then we, as we grew, it was for the last year. In about a year, DIY Housing TV. But then we've had another name change, and our official name, which is up on our Blog Talk scrolling marquee, is DIY Shacks. DIY Shacks. And that's because I felt that's in our growth. That's where we are today. What I found out over this past weekend is that out of 8 billion people on the planet, 24% of the households on this planet live in what is called informal housing. You know, that's the name that would come out of the United Nations, informal housing. Regular, run-of-the-mill folk call it shacks. Some of these shacks are dilapidated, but some of these shacks are pimped out. They look good on the inside and outside, so... that's where we are, and the common denominator with, like I say, right now there's over 1.9 billion, 24% of the planet live in what normal everyday people call shacks. All right, and they have businesses out of those shacks, but the common denominator is this. Okay, and you've heard me talk about the Amish and the Mennonite, but the global numbers dwarf them. We know the Amish and the Mennonite, they build their own homes and barns and all that. But on the global level, like I say, you got 1.9 billion. And they predict by 2030, which isn't far away, that 3 billion people will live in a shack. Now, the common denominator with these this 1.9 plus billion right now is that
they all built those houses themselves. They built it by themselves or with family and friends. Now, here's how I translate this. There's over a billion, there's 2 billion people on the planet out of 8 billion households that the people who, or head up the households who built those houses, say, you know what, I don't want to participate in a mortgage. I don't want a 30-year mortgage. I don't want a 20-year mortgage. I don't even want a one-day mortgage. So they don't want to deal with general contractors, expensive builders. And I would say, well, matter of fact, every country on the planet, they have what these are called informal houses. So this week, today's podcast is titled Love Shack. I didn't hold up that audio, though. We'll say that for another day. But all I'm going to, and I'm going to just read off Wikipedia here. Delmo, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, good.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. All right. Let's see. So if we go to Wikipedia. My phone's slipping over there. You want to look, because you can read along with me. Informal. Let me spell it right. Oh, go look up informal settlements. Those are keywords.
Oh, go ahead.
Or informal housing. But we're going to start. You know what? Hold it. Let's go with informal housing. Okay, informal. We'll go to settlements later. Informal housing. Okay, to have an informal status, to have informal, all right, let's see. Informal housing is any housing that is illegal, comma, outside of government control, comma, because it can be legal, but outside of government control, or doesn't have state protection. It can include informal rental housing, housing that contradicts the city laws, bylaws, if it's in a city, that's a municipality. Let's see, house that's built on land not owned by the housing owner, lack of inadequate access to basic public services, and a lot of people, they don't want state-sponsored services, like where I'm at. I don't want city water. I don't want municipal water. I'm on a well. Let's see. And many of my neighbors, same thing. Substandard house, and it's legal here. It's legal where I'm at. Let's see. Okay. Now, let's go back. All right. We're looking at informal housing. Oh, and that goes back to settlements. All right, we'll go back to that in a minute. All right, informal housing or informal settlement. They're two different things, actually, but one, you can find one inside the other one. Can include any form of housing, shelter, or settlement. Like New York City is a settlement. You know, it's a large settlement called a city because you have cities, towns, villages. But all the common denominator between a town, a village, and the city, the size of New York, is they're all settlements. They're just different distinctions of settlements. Informal housing and or informal settlement can include any form of housing, shelter, or settlement which is legal or illegal, falls outside of government control or regulation, or is not afforded protection by the state. Such as the informal housing industry is part of the informal sector. All right. Let's see. I'm on Wikipedia with all this. All right. The informal sector is also known as the gray economy. All right. Informal housing or informal settlement, or whatever it is. Let's see. To have informal housing status is to exist in a state of deregulation, one where the ownership, use, and purpose of the land cannot be fixed or mapped according to any prescribed set of regulations of law. Now, there's a lot of towns all over the world, particularly here in the United States, where I think I've mentioned this one before, Blackjack, Oklahoma. I haven't found it online yet, but it exists. I've been there 5 or 6 times. So let's see. While there's no global unified law on property ownership, the informal occupant or community will typically lack security or tenure. And mind you, they really mean state-sponsored security, the police. That's another word for it. And they call a lot of these homes that are informal homes. Let's see, informal sector. The informal sector, also known as the informal economy, and you can look that up online. The informal economy, informal sector, or gray economy, is a part of any economy that is neither monitored by any form of government, period. I'll read that again. And that's where we're at. DIY shacks. We're right in the informal economy. The informal economy or informal sector or the gray economy is a part of any economy that is neither taxed nor monitored by any form of government. Now, we are monitored by, you know, county government, but, you know, they have relaxed rules and regulations as compared to a larger town or county. Although the informal sector makes up a significant portion of the economies of developing countries, it is sometimes stigmatized as troublesome and unmanageable. However, the informal sector provides critical economic opportunities for the poor and has been expanding rapidly since the 1960s. And that's where I see it. A lot of people just can't afford to live in these big cities anymore. They can't afford to. I mean, you practically need to be wealthy, or you do need to be wealthy to live in some of these, like Seattle, Washington, Dallas, Texas, probably San Antonio, Miami, New York, Boston, Washington, D.C., those places where you have people renting rooms for $700 or $800 a month, renting a room and a house. Whereas if you go to some of these rural areas, which are informal in nature and have the informal economy, you know, $700, that might get you an acre of land. Let's see. So this, all of this week and all into next week, we're going to get into the informal economy, also known as the gray economy, informal settlements, and you know things that tap into that, because the type of housing that will be, you know, putting up online and all that falls into that in order to legally stay in these places. for the most part, you need to be outside of a major metropolitan area. So that's where we're going day by day on that. So, Delmar, anything you want to put out there before we got about 19 minutes left, sir.
Again, it just confirms that the options are out there and people understand what they don't have to do. The city don't tell you, the government doesn't tell you you can do this or do that. They just tell you what you got to do. And people think that's what I got to do. Well, this kind of information is important if you're going to try to help folks to have better choices. And I didn't know what to find, what you just covered. I didn't know about that. That's new to me.
A week ago, I didn't know. Yeah, a week ago, I didn't know. Well, like I said, I ran across, you know, I started looking up shacks and the industry there. And one of the things we're going to go through next week is, and matter of fact, I'll do a little preview today. Let's see. And people, you can follow me on this one. Hold on. Before I go to that, let me see. Gray economy. Okay, that's the same. Okay. On Monday, and people can look this up right now. We're going to be covering slum tourism. Another name for it would be ghetto tourism. Matter of fact, I'm going to put that in your search engine. Slum tourism or ghetto tourism, see what comes back. Okay, here we go. I'm just reading this right offline, people. Ghetto tourism, also known as slum tourism, is a type of tourism that involves visiting impoverished areas. It can also include visiting areas that have been affected by disasters like Chernobyl, Fukushima. All right, and let's go more into detail on this. Slum tourism is often criticized as voyeuristic and exploitive. Let's see, Wikipedia's got a whole thing on this. And what's interesting is a lot of slum areas eventually get gentrified. All right, slum tourism, also known as poverty tourism, also known as ghetto tourism, also there's another genre of it called trauma tourism. It's a type of tourism that involves visiting impoverished areas, or in some cases, areas that were affected by disasters, such as nuclear fallout zones like Chernobyl, Fukushima, thus trauma tourism. Originally focused on the slums and ghettos of London and in Manhattan in the 19th century, slum tourism is now prominent in South Africa, India, Brazil, Kenya, the Philippines, and parts of the United States. Let's see. And there's quite a bit here written on it. All right, so we have that for Monday. All right, so hold it. Now, I was looking for Millie Fuller here. And that's how a lot, you know what, neighborhoods that have been gentrified, I'm sure there was some tour that went through there first. Let's see. I'm looking for Nellie Fuller. Okay, here we go.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. Coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and beg, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
And that is a culturally for the United States. That is an example of informal housing. And this, the term informal housing is recognized and used by the United Nations. And informal settlements, typically a place where you have, it could be a neighborhood or a village, or in some cases a town, where the majority of buildings are basically built by the people living in them. So they've totally eliminated that. Like I said, there's over 1.9 billion households on the planet. On a planet that are, you know, and they call them, but the average person would call them a shack. And yesterday, and we're going to do a feature on this for the next couple of weeks too. There is a show, it's a web show that you can watch it on Netflix, not Netflix, on YouTube called Pimp My Shack. Pimp My Shack, S-H-A-C-K, Pimp My Shack. But anyway, so our updated name for this podcast And you can find us on all our social media. I'll tell you that right now. It's DIY Shacks. DIY Shacks. So if you go to DIY Shacks on YouTube, DIY underscore Shacks on Instagram, DIY Shacks on X, formerly Twitter, and of course here on Blog Talk, DIY Shacks. And then when we boot up, matter of fact, I'll probably do a dry run tomorrow. What do you call it? StreamYard. DIY. So Shacks. Like I said, the common denominator with a shack is something that anybody, I mean, basically, they did it themselves. So, DIY, and that's what we call it, DIY Shacks. All right, we'll be back right after this.
I was talking to a cat the other night. They said, what everybody's looking for today? They're looking for escapism.
Okay, just as a reminder, we have a original four meeting or conference call right here on the podcast tomorrow, and that'll be at 4:30 Eastern Standard Time, 3:30 Central Standard Time. So that's tomorrow, which is midweek Wednesday.
Yeah.
Okay. And let's see. Delmar, you want to add anything in? Like I said, we'll be covering informal formal settlements, which is the official name for informal. In other words, people that are basically self-governed in informal housing and updates on our projects dealing with this. And once again, our Facebook page is now DIY Shacks. All our social media is DIY Shacks. That keeps it simple. So we're on Facebook, Blog Talk, Instagram. On Instagram is DIY _ Shacks. That's pretty simple. And shacks are not regulated. Of course, now, if you go to certain, like New York City, you're not going to be able to construct a shack. If you do, they're going to make you tear it down. But you have to go to other parts of New York State where you can do it. So, we'll take a see what – actually, if you want to look into the future, see what they're doing overseas, in my opinion. Delmar, you've done some global traveling now. You probably saw, like, when you went to New Guinea, you probably could have saw some, well, I'm sure you saw things you see here, but you might have saw, I don't know, it could be the people, the food, something. That's what I like about travel. You can see what they're doing successfully in one place, and if they're not doing it where you are, then if you're the first to come back over with it, that's what the Walton family did.
Both levels of society, up and lower. Sometimes side by side.
Right. I'm trying to. Okay, let me see. I had the wrong. It's starting to get dark here. I got to go feed two dogs and a pig. So on that note, we'll be back here tomorrow, 4:30 Eastern Standard Time, 3:30 Central, for our next installment here on DIY Shacks.
Jiffy Lube, we car about cars. In fact, we're kind of obsessed. That's why we've been taking car off business with quick quality oil changes and service for over 40 years. And with things like our Carful Vehicle Review, where our experts check, fill, clean, and inspect your vehicle, you'll know we'll car for your car like we car for our own. Jiffy Lube. Car more.
Visit JiffyLubeDC.com to find a Jiffy Lube service center near you.